Welcome to NTD News Today. Here are today's top stories. President Trump's tariffs rattle global markets. Crude oil plummets to its lowest level since 2021. The U.S. economy adds more jobs than expected in March, and the labor market remains strong for now. President Trump's agenda on the move in Congress. Senators start debating on a budget bill that will cut taxes, boost funding for immigration enforcement, and more. We have the details on that. Secretary of State Marco Rubio talking about global trade while addressing NATO allies. What NATO says about the legality of President Trump's new tariffs. And a woman in Britain is found guilty after holding a sign saying, "Here to talk if you want," near an abortion clinic. She's convicted of breaching a ban on anti-abortion protests near clinics. The State Department has monitored this case over its free speech implications.
This is NTD News Today, live from our global headquarters in New York City.
Today is Friday, April 4th. I'm Stephanie Cox. The U.S. economy added 228,000 jobs in March, far more than expected. Economists polled by Reuters had forecast 135,000 jobs. A Wall Street Journal poll of economists estimated an increase of 140,000. The unemployment rate rose from 4.1% to 4.2% in February. The latest jobs report comes amid President Trump's revamp of global trade policy. Democrats are pushing back on Trump's sweeping tariffs. Earlier this week, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer criticized tariffs as a tax on the American people. And Trump's tariffs are hitting the market. Stocks tumbled worldwide today while crude oil prices dropped amid tariff turbulence. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ Composite are down over 4% as of this morning. The Dow Jones Industrial Average tumbled nearly 1,500 points, or 3.6%. The price of crude oil fell by 8% to $61 a barrel, its lowest level since 2021. European stocks saw some of the day's biggest losses, with indexes sinking roughly 4%. In Asian markets, Japan's Nikkei 225 fell 2.8%. As investors grapple with concerns about new tariffs, President Trump says the market will boom just like a patient will heal after an operation. On Truth Social this morning, the president wrote, quote, "To the many investors coming into the United States and investing massive amounts of money, my policies will never change." Next, countries are hitting back against new U.S. tariffs. China announced today it will impose a 34% tariff on U.S. products beginning April 10th. The new tariff matches the rate of the U.S. reciprocal tariff of 34% on Chinese exports Trump ordered this week. Beijing also says it will impose more export controls on rare earth minerals. The materials are used in high-tech products such as computer chips and electric vehicle batteries. China's Customs Administration also says it suspended imports of chicken from two U.S. suppliers. And Beijing announced that it filed a lawsuit with the World Trade Organization over the tariffs. In another Truth Social post this morning, Trump said China played it wrong. In his words, quote, "They panicked, the one thing they cannot afford to do." Trump also wrote today that he called to Tô Lam, the general secretary of the Communist Party of Vietnam. The president said Lam told him Vietnam wants to cut their tariffs down to zero if they're able to make an agreement with the U.S. Trump said he looks forward to a meeting with Lam in the near future. And Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney said Canada got the best of a series of bad deals from the U.S. tariffs, but he vowed to fight the measure. Canada has announced a tariff on American vehicles. That was yesterday. Carney also says that Canada will fight the U.S. tariffs if they're lifted, until they're lifted.
With respect to the reciprocal tariffs, which is what the Americans are calling the series of tariffs announcements this week, Canada got the best of a series of bad deals. That's true. But we did get a better deal than any other country. But we also have the reality that in place are tariffs that came from the unjustified tariffs that came from the fentanyl issue, an issue that we have put enormous efforts into addressing on both sides of the border, tariffs that are in place on aluminum and steel, and then tariffs that entered into force as of yesterday in our automobile sector. So I don't think this is time for celebration. It's a time to fight those tariffs.
The UK is taking a more conciliatory approach, trying to strike a deal. The United Kingdom is engaged in discussions with the United States to reach an economic agreement. Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni said today negotiations on tariffs between the U.S. and the European Union should aim at lifting all of them. Meanwhile, some are suggesting the European Union take a cautious approach. French Finance Minister Eric Lombard said today the EU should not respond to the tariffs with the same countermeasures. He says that would impact EU consumers. Lombard says they are working on a package of responses to bring the U.S. to the negotiating table. Here's more on how different countries are reacting. South Africa says it has no plans that are going to be immediately implemented to retaliate against the U.S. tariffs. Senior government officials say the country will instead seek to negotiate exemptions and quota agreements. Trump imposed a 31% tariff on U.S. imports from South Africa on Wednesday. And President Trump has unveiled a new pathway to citizenship. It's called the Gold Card, and it has a picture of the president on it. It was one of the many topics Trump spoke to reporters about on Air Force One yesterday. Here are the details on that.
Speaking to the press on Air Force One on Thursday, Trump showed off a new $5 million gold card he calls the Trump Card. Back in February, Trump said he would begin selling gold cards to help clear some of the backlog in the EB-5 visa program.
For $5 million, this could be yours.
The EB-5 visa is a little different from your standard visa. It gives foreign nationals who have invested around $1 million into the U.S. a green card and a pathway to citizenship. The trade association Invest in the USA says there have been around 100,000 EB-5 visas issued in the last 25 years. Trump's new gold card aims to make it simpler for wealthy foreign nationals to establish themselves and their businesses in the U.S. Unlike the EB-5, the gold card will not prioritize investment in rural or high unemployment areas. Trump said the card would be available in less than 2 weeks. Trump covered a variety of issues in his press gaggle aboard Air Force One Thursday. He confirmed reports some staffers at the National Security Council have been laid off.
Always we're going to let go of people that we don't like, or people that we don't think can do the job, or people that may have loyalties to somebody else. You'll always have that.
Trump denied allegations conservative activist Laura Loomer influenced the decision.
Did she have anything to do with the NSC aides who were ousted?
No, not at all.
Trump met with Loomer Wednesday at the White House. In a post on X, she said she wouldn't give any details about the meeting out of respect for Trump. The firings came a week after National Security Advisor Michael Waltz accidentally added an Atlantic journalist to a signal group discussing plans to attack Houthi terrorists in Yemen. Trump also said tariffs on pharmaceuticals and semiconductors are coming.
The chips are starting very soon. Pharma is going to be starting to come in, I think, at a level that you haven't really seen before.
Trump said the market reaction to his sweeping tariffs was to be expected, but that they would bounce back.
It was a sick patient. It went through an operation on Liberation Day. And it's going to be a booming country.
Trump is in Miami ahead of Live Golf Miami, hosted by Trump National Doral. He told reporters he's optimistic about a merger between Live Golf and the PGA Tour. Trump recently hosted the leaders of the PGA and the Saudi-financed Live Golf at the White House.
The head of the National Security Agency has been dismissed. Officials confirmed NSA Director General Timothy Ha and Deputy Director Wendy Noble have both been removed from their positions. The dismissals drew a strong reaction from Congressman Jim Himes, the ranking Democrat on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Himes said the decision deeply disturbed him and requested an explanation on why the director was removed. The clock is ticking for TikTok. It faces a U.S. ban if a non-Chinese company doesn't buy it by tomorrow. That's when an extension from President Trump runs out. It's unclear if finalizing a deal today is feasible, but the White House says it's crafting a plan to avoid the ban.
It'll come out before the deadline. The White House says it's working on a deal to keep TikTok in U.S. app stores. A bipartisan law is set to ban it over national security concerns, unless its Chinese parent company ByteDance sells it. TikTok is operating on an extension that ends tomorrow.
You want to make sure that the TikTok app in the United States is not spying on people.
Right.
It's good for national security. You also want to give people access to this incredible platform.
Under the U.S. law, ByteDance must sell at least 80% ownership. China seems reluctant to allow that. President Donald Trump is floating the idea of using tariffs as leverage.
We have a situation with TikTok where China will probably say, we'll approve a deal, but will you do something on the tariff? The tariffs give us great power to negotiate.
A deal also must meet two other requirements. The first is TikTok and ByteDance can't coordinate on data sharing due to privacy concerns. Analysts say that could be doable since the U.S. company Oracle now stores that information. The second is ByteDance can't control TikTok's algorithm for fear China could use it to influence Americans. That's a sticking point that Trump once proposed addressing with a lease agreement.
Up ahead, Secretary of State Marco Rubio and NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte speak about global economies and security after a two-day meeting on foreign business ministers in Brussels. And Attorney General Pam Bondi says three more alleged MS-13 gang members have been arrested. They're in connection with a killing a decade ago in Florida. More on that after this break. Secretary of State Marco Rubio is attending a two-day meeting of NATO foreign ministers in Brussels. Rubio said today the U.S. must reset the global trade order to better help Americans.
We're the largest consumer market in the world, and yet the only thing we export is services. And we need to stop that. We need to get back to a time where we're a country that can make things. And to do that, we have to reset the global order of trade. So the worst thing is to leave it the way it is forever. I mean, this is just can't continue. We can't continue to be a country that doesn't make things. We have to be able to make things to provide jobs for Americans.
Rubio's comment on trade comes just 2 days after President Trump announced new tariffs on many countries around the globe. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte commented on Trump's announcement today. Rutte says the tariffs do not violate treaties between NATO allies. He was responding to a question about an article in the NATO treaty, but Rutte dismissed those concerns. Ukraine's foreign minister said today a government delegation will soon head to the United States for discussions on a new framework for a minerals deal. President Donald Trump has proposed a more expansive contract with Ukraine. The initial version of the deal remained unsigned following a contentious Oval Office meeting between President Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in February. Ukraine's foreign minister said that Kyiv is reviewing the Trump administration's new proposal, reiterating the deal should benefit both countries. The diplomat added that it was also important to ensure the agreement did not kill Kyiv's aspirations to join the European Union. Regarding a peace agreement with Moscow, the Ukrainian foreign minister said today, quote, Ukraine is not the obstacle for peace. Now the ball is on Russia's side. Joining us now to discuss is Douglas Ernest, a U.S. Army veteran and business owner. Good to have you with us today, Douglas.
Great to see you again.
Likewise. Now, today, after meeting with European allies, Secretary Marco Rubio said the U.S. will know if Russia is serious about peace talks in a matter of weeks. This was after European nations accused President Putin of stalling in the ceasefire negotiations. Do you have any inclination of why the ceasefire hasn't been confirmed yet?
You know, that's a great question. And, you know, thankfully, Marco Rubio was able to attend this meeting of NATO ministries of foreign affairs and actually meet with the Secretary Mark Ruff so that they can find a way to relieve the tension, because that tension has been growing for the last couple of months as the Trump administration has attempted to breach the war and attempt to get this ceasefire brought to the table. It just feels like they get a couple of inches, they get a couple of both sides to agree, and then bam, something happens, you know, such as the story we saw with Russia increasing their military by 10 to 15%, up to 160,000 new troops. But right now, we're kind of at a stalemate, and we really hope and pray that the Trump administration can finally bring both sides together and bring that deal that is so desperately needed to bring world peace and save these people from the suffering they have endured for the last 3 years.
Yeah, regarding NATO, U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth had warned last month that American security priorities lie elsewhere in Asia and on the United States' own borders. Do you expect a big military drawdown of U.S. troops in Europe? And if so, how fast and how much?
The drawdown in Europe has been going on ever since I left Germany in 1992. Back when I was in the military active duty as an infantryman, we had about 400,000 troops in Europe, and now we're down to around 100,000. It's actually de-escalating as we speak. So I would expect that to continue because we expect and we have emboldened NATO to increase their spending. Most of these nations have only been spending 1% to 2% of their GDP when they've agreed to do 5% of their GDP in the past. We need to find a way for them to embolden their strength and to spend their money on defense instead of us. As we mentioned on this program before, it costs $1 million to $1.5 million to train an entry-level soldier, $2 million to train a specialty force, and $7 to $10 million to put a general in place for the American military. So we've been spending money to defend other nations and then lacking the defense of ours, such as the border that you mentioned, and some of the threats we have from the Middle East. It's time for the European Union to come to the table and invest in their peace and their security, not just rely on the American force to do so.
On that point, in Europe and also Canada, governments are reportedly working on burden-shifting plans to take over more of the load while trying to ensure that no security vacuum is created if U.S. troops and equipment are continued to be withdrawn from the continent. In your assessment, how long do you think such a shift might take, and could it come in time for any increased tension, say, if a Russia-Ukraine ceasefire dissolves?
Well, the good thing, we have Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth. A drawdown could be very fast because Pete Hegseth is not a normal Secretary of Defense. He's not a politician. He's a stick-and-move, get-it-done warfighter who's been on the battlefield before, and when he sets his mind to it, he's going to get the job done. What's different about the European Union, it's ran by politicians. It's not run by warfighters. And if they try to do something, it's going to take them a lot longer. The inertial forces that they have hold them back and doesn't allow them to propel forward, as you can see with the Trump administration, how they're moving at such a swift speed. I would expect the drawdown to over-excel the actual buildup of military in the European Union. So we would suggest and hope to see that they start quickly and start to, number one, invest that money, show that they're investing the money. Maybe that will allow the Trump administration to maybe take a slower path instead of moving so quickly that would potentially endanger them if there was a move calculated by Russia.
And looking at the economy, we heard today Secretary of State Marco Rubio saying the U.S. must reset the global trade order to better help Americans. As a business owner, how do you see the stance of the U.S. here?
You know, that's another great question. You know, at the same time that Marco Rubio was speaking yesterday, reciprocal tariffs of 20% were announced in the European Union. Very hard position for him to be in and to stand up there and speak like this. The American people have been taken advantage of since the onset of globalization in the 80s. My father was a welder. My mother worked in a deli contestant cutting meat, and both of their jobs were exported. So I'm a victim, if you will, if that's the correct terminology, of the globalization that took over our country. And as Marco Rubio said in your previous post, our country, our nation has been turned into a nation of services and technology instead of just plain Jane, getting it done kind of work, manufacturing plants, automobile plants. And that's shifted the American worker to a lower wage and having them to find a different type of job and not allowing everybody to just get a job. They're having to rely more on government resources. So I would hope and pray that the American people will stand behind the Trump administration, as hard as this might be, as these temporary setbacks may be, because in time it will change and it will propel our country forward to new heights that we've never seen before or even could have imagined were possible, like we had back in the 80s and 90s with the onset, before the onset of globalization.
Now looking abroad, Rubio also said today that world economies will adjust, that the markets will adjust to the tariffs from the U.S. What's your assessment of the impact and reading of the movement of markets so far in terms of how long you think it might take for that adjustment to take place?
Number one, what happened over the last 48 hours shows the immense power of the United States and its economy. Our economy is the driving force for the global economy. You can see that when we make a move, how it trickles down to the tentacles of everything that we do and affects global trade. Now, we have been very unfairly treated for the last 20 years, and the previous administration let it get worse and worse, and the trickling down has actually gotten pathetic, in my opinion, because we're being treated so unfairly. unfairly, and people are paying so much more. People have to get up and go to work to pay for the unfair trade practices that are done every day in our country. I know that the damage is done. Let's hope that we've hit the bottom and we're about to hit the U curve that takes us back up. And now most of these nations are going to come to the table to negotiate a better deal. Those nations that come to the table and make a deal will be our trading partners of the future, and those that don't will be left behind. We are the number one demand force in the world, and we will continue to be, especially with the Trump administration leading the realm.
All right. Thank you so much for your input today. Douglas Ernest, great to speak with you as always.
As always, my pleasure.
And Senator Chuck Grassley wants Congress to sign off on any new tariffs. Grassley introduced a bill yesterday to that end. If successful, Congress would have to approve new tariffs within 60 days of their imposition. Otherwise, they would be automatically blocked. Grassley joined Democratic Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington for the Trade Review Act of 2025. The bill was proposed a day after four other Senate Republicans voted to lift Trump's tariffs on Canadian goods. Neither Grassley's bill nor the Senate measure are likely to become law. On Capitol Hill, President Trump's agenda is on the move. Senators yesterday evening held a procedural vote, starting a debate on a big budget bill with tax and budget cuts. Democrats railed against it and say they will offer several changes to it later today. NTD's Melina Weiskopf reports.
Amid friction between House and Senate Republicans over how to move President Trump's agenda, senators work on a new budget plan. This one allows $1.5 trillion in new tax cuts. That's on top of extending Trump's 2017 tax cuts. And despite disagreements between House and Senate GOP lawmakers, both chambers say their top goal is preventing a massive tax increase later this year.
Those who make less than $400,000 a year, there would be a $2.6 trillion tax increase on those wage earners and a $600 billion tax increase on small businesses. That's what's in stake in this conversation.
In addition to tax cuts, the budget increases the debt limit by $4 trillion, boosts spending for immigration enforcement and the Pentagon, and paves the way for more oil drilling on U.S. soil. Although the bill requires steep spending cuts, Democrats argue it will ultimately add to the debt.
And I find this very interesting, because some of the same senators have had very deep concerns about the debt not too long ago and are now on board with this reckless, irresponsible plan.
Democrats are expected to push several changes to it with amendment votes later tonight. A final vote on passing the budget framework will likely happen over the weekend. Reporting from Washington, D.C., Melina Weiskopf, NTD News.
New moms in Congress could soon catch a break. Congresswoman Ana Paulina Luna says Speaker Mike Johnson reached out to her to discuss a limited form of proxy voting, specifically for new mothers in Congress. Proxy voting is a form of remote voting. The conversation followed public support from President Trump. Trump Thursday said someone who has a baby should be able to call in and vote. Luna thanked Trump on X for supporting the resolution, which she called pro-family. Luna has been leading efforts to allow lawmakers with newborns to vote remotely. And the case of a man wrongfully deported to El Salvador is heading to court. A district judge in Maryland is scheduled to hear arguments in the case later today. Kilmar Abrego Garcia was deported and sent to a mega prison in El Salvador. The facility holds alleged gang members. The White House acknowledged that an administrative error was the cause for the deportation, but officials say the U.S. has no legal authority to bring Garcia back to the country. In 2019, Garcia was granted protected status by an immigration judge. But the White House previously said that suspected gang members don't have protected status in the U.S. anymore. Garcia's attorneys will now ask the judge to force the administration to take back the deportee from custody in El Salvador. U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi today announced that three alleged MS-13 gang members have been federally charged. They're allegedly involved in a killing a decade ago in Florida. The move came as part of the Trump administration's push to prosecute violent gangs. Here's the attorney general.
We're here to announce the arrest of three more MS-13 gang members who were in this country illegally, and they were in Florida, and we will be reviewing them. They've all been arrested for first-degree murder. We will be reviewing them to see if we will seek the death penalty.
The gang members were allegedly involved in four murders back in 2014 and 2015. The cases were reopened in 2020 after going cold. The suspects have been charged with first-degree murder. Their cases are being reviewed. If convicted, they may face the death penalty. K through 12 schools that want federal money have 10 days to show the Education Department they are following federal civil rights laws. Specifically, they'll have to certify that they've eliminated diversity, equity, and inclusion practices. Acting Assistant Secretary for Civil Rights Craig Traynor explained, saying, quote, "Federal financial assistance is a privilege, not a right." Traynor added that a number of schools were using DEI programs to discriminate against certain groups. The certification asks state and school leaders to acknowledge that their federal money is conditioned on compliance with civil rights laws. Schools and states that engage in illegal DEI practices could lose grants and contracts. K through 12 institutions could also be held liable under the False Claims Act for defrauding government programs. President Trump's attempt to overhaul election rules is facing another lawsuit. This time it's from 19 Democratic state attorneys general. It involves the executive order Trump signed last week, which boosts proof of citizenship requirements for voter registration. It also prevents states from counting mail-in ballots they receive after Election Day. The order directs the withholding of election funds from states that don't enforce the requirements. The attorneys general argue the executive order amounts to an unprecedented seizure of power over election administration. The lawsuit also accuses Trump of impeding states' control over how elections are run. Democratic congressional leaders and nonpartisan organizations filed similar lawsuits challenging the executive order earlier this week. While Democrats have said it's already illegal for non-citizens to vote, Republicans have raised concerns about how the lack of verification may allow some non-citizens to lie in order to register. A powerful storm system will bring significant life-threatening flash flooding in the central U.S. tomorrow. At least 7 people have already died in Tennessee, Missouri, and Indiana in the initial wave of storms that spawned powerful tornadoes on Wednesday and Thursday. NTD's Daniel Monahan reports.
At least 5 people have been killed in Tennessee.
When it comes to fatalities, we err on the side of caution and making sure that we're not double counting, and also to make sure that families have had time to be notified.
Governor Bill Lee says it's too early to know whether there were more deaths as searches continued.
This is a multi-day severe storm that has already produced tornadoes, heavy rains, flooding across the state, hail.
Lee said entire neighborhoods in Selmer were completely wiped out. Those who died included a Tennessee man and his teenage daughter, whose home was destroyed. Time-lapse video taken on Thursday showed storm clouds rolling over homes in Spring Hill, Tennessee, as the National Weather Service warned of generational floods in the South and Midwest. In Kentucky, flattened buildings gave evidence of the severity of storms that ripped through the South and Midwest on Wednesday and Thursday. Residents were seen clearing debris from buildings that had their facades completely torn out by the severe weather. In far western Kentucky, 4 people were injured while taking shelter in a vehicle under a church carport. Here, a flooded intersection in Casey County, Kentucky. In Arkansas, there was massive destruction in Lake City, where homes were flattened and cars were flipped and tossed into trees. 7 injuries were reported, but no deaths. In Indiana, a man died after his pickup truck struck downed power lines. In Missouri, a fire official died while likely trying to help a stranded motorist. Violent storms and tornadoes tore through cities from Oklahoma to Indiana during what could be a record-setting period of deadly weather and flooding. About 34 tornadoes were reported on Wednesday, while twisters were confirmed Thursday night in 6 states: Arkansas, Illinois, Kentucky, Mississippi, Missouri, and Tennessee. The storms destroyed homes and sent debris nearly 5 miles into the air in one location. Forecasters say it was the opening act for a week of wild weather that could bring life-threatening flash floods across the nation's midsection. They warn of catastrophic weather soon ahead. Satellite imagery showed thunderstorms lining up like freight trains taking the same tracks over communities in Arkansas, Tennessee, and Kentucky. According to the National Weather Prediction Center in Maryland, the bullseye centered on a swath along the Mississippi River and included the more than 1.3 million people around Memphis, Tennessee. More than 90 million people are at risk of severe weather from Texas to Minnesota to Maine. Daniel Monahan, NTD News.
Still to come, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu could meet with President Trump soon, and the latest from Gaza. Taiwan announces billions of dollars worth of financial help for domestic companies to deal with the impact of U.S. tariffs. And China is trying to replicate what the U.S. was doing in Africa before the cancellation of USAID programs. Hear what the commander of the U.S. military's Africa Command has to say. I'm Stephanie Cox, and this is World Watch. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu could meet with Trump soon. Taiwan unveils more than $8 billion to help its industry cope with U.S. tariffs. And China is trying to copy former USAID programs in Africa. First up, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu could soon be meeting with President Trump. Trump made the comments yesterday. News of the sit-down came as Hamas-controlled health officials said dozens were killed in an Israeli strike in Gaza. The strike happened at a school building in Gaza City. Israel says the school building was used by Hamas terrorists as a command and control center. It accused the terrorists of deliberately using civilian infrastructure as bases. Meanwhile, the Israeli military said today it killed a Hamas commander in southern Lebanon. The Lebanese health ministry said three people were killed in an Israeli strike on an apartment in Sidon. Taiwan announced at least $8.7 billion worth of financial help for companies and industries to deal with the impact of U.S. tariffs.
This support plan includes financial support, simplified customs clearance process, and tax benefits. Starting with the financial support, our measure is to reduce the interest on trade financing. For exporters, we would provide interest reduction of up to $200 billion Taiwan dollars, thus lowering the cost of capital for manufacturers.
Taiwan's finance minister and Taiwan's premier reiterated the government will support Taiwan's industries financially. The electronics and steel sectors are among the worst impacted. The premier said that there's still common ground between the democracies of the U.S. and Taiwan, despite the tariffs, and that the U.S. tariff policy is universal and aimed at many countries. Taiwan runs a large trade surplus with the United States and is facing a 32% duty on its products. But the U.S. tariffs do not apply to semiconductors, a major Taiwanese export. Taiwan has also not announced any retaliatory tariffs. The United States is the island's most important international backer in the face of mounting pressure from Beijing over the Chinese communist regime's sovereignty claims. And the Trump administration is being sued for imposing tariffs on Chinese imports. The nonprofit civil rights organization says Trump overstepped his authority. The New Civil Liberties Alliance filed the lawsuit on behalf of Simplified, a Florida-based retailer that imports materials from China. The group's argument centers on Trump's application of the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. According to the lawsuit, the legislation authorizes specific emergency actions such as imposing sanctions or freezing assets to protect the United States from foreign threats. However, the NCLA says the law does not authorize the president to impose tariffs. The group argues that the authority to regulate commerce and impose tariffs rests with Congress, not the president. And China is trying to replicate certain former USAID programs in Africa. That's according to the commander of the U.S. military's Africa Command. China is apparently trying to copy some USAID programs stopped as part of the Trump administration's plan to reduce the federal government. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said 83% of USAID programs were cut and the rest were folded into the State Department. The head of U.S. Africa Command says China can't accurately replicate the U.S.'s programs in Africa, but the U.S. still needs programs there to maintain strategic advantage over the Chinese Communist Party. He brought up the example of an AIDS relief program credited with saving over 25 million lives. He also said he can't think of a single African country that was better off having partnered with China. A woman in Britain at the center of a free speech dispute has been found guilty. She was convicted for breaching a so-called buffer zone near an abortion clinic. NTD's international correspondent Malcolm Hudson has more on this.
A 64-year-old woman in Britain was found guilty in a free speech legal battle that drew focus from the US State Department. Livia Tosici-Bolt was convicted on Friday of two counts of breaching a so-called buffer zone outside an abortion clinic in Bournemouth, England in 2023. She was accused of holding a sign that read, "Here to talk, if you want," within 100 metres of the clinic. These buffer zones are normally used to prevent substance abuse and criminality issues. They have more recently been used to enforce zones around abortion clinics, making it illegal to intentionally or recklessly influence anyone's decision to access abortion services within a 150-metre radius. The judge said Tosici-Bolt showed a lack of insight into the potential impact her presence could have on those attending the clinic. Tosici-Bolt spoke outside of the court.
"This is a dark day for Great Britain. I was not protesting, nor did I harass, intimidate, or obstruct anyone. All I did was offering consensual conversation in a public space."
She said freedom of speech is in a state of crisis in the UK, and said she is considering all legal options to fight for free speech. Bournemouth, Christchurch and Poole Council welcomed the conviction, emphasising that the buffer zone was designed to ensure patients and staff could access the clinic safely and without fear of intimidation. The Bournemouth clinic boss said they had endured years of anti-abortion protests, resulting in over 500 reports of harassment before the implementation of the buffer zone. Tosici-Bolt's case attracted international attention after the US State Department's Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights and Labour posted on X last Sunday saying, "We are monitoring her case. It is important that the UK respect and protect freedom of expression."
"The US Department was right to be concerned with my case, as it has serious implications for the entire Western world."
The judge ordered Tosici-Bolt to pay around $25,000 toward court costs. The issue of free speech was raised by Vice President J.D. Vance during a recent press conference in Washington with British Prime Minister Keir Starmer. Vance expressed concerns over infringements on free speech in the UK. In response at the time, Starmer said the UK has had free speech for a very long time and it will last for a very, very long time. Malcolm Hudson, NTD News.
The U.S. government has reportedly banned American personnel with security clearances and their close associates from having romantic relationships with Chinese citizens while in China. Here's more on that.
Former CIA analyst Peter Mattis says China's Ministry of State Security uses human connections to gather U.S. intelligence. And that isn't limited to just spies. They can also call on ordinary Chinese citizens to serve the Chinese Communist Party's interests. Mattis emphasized that anyone dating an American diplomat could become a target and pressured to report intel to the Chinese regime. Reports say the policy has been in effect since January and applies to U.S. personnel in China. This includes the embassy in Beijing and consulates in Guangzhou, Shanghai, Shenyang, Wuhan, and Hong Kong. Some exceptions can be made for relationships established before the policy. But if the request is denied, the relationship must end or the individual must resign. Anyone found violating the policy will be ordered to leave China immediately.
Still to come, in the new episode of Bay Area Innovators, actress Kristen Carey shares her secrets to a lasting career in Hollywood. We have an inspiring look at a character actress thriving through passion, grit, and a little improvisation. And Geneva hosts an annual watch trade show. We have more on the timepieces to look out for up next. Welcome back. Kristen Carey, an actress known for roles in Hall Pass with Owen Wilson and The Greatest Beer Run Ever with Zac Efron, recently shared how she overcame Hollywood's rejection, embracing her unique strengths over chasing lead roles. We dive into her inspiring journey to become an actress and her valuable advice for young artists.
During career, if you had ups and downs, and then how did you come out when you had a desperate moment or you had like a really big issue?
There's a lot of obstacles. Obviously, there can be. You're too tall. You're too short. You're too this. You're too that. You're not pretty enough. You're too pretty. You're not thin. I mean, it runs a gamut. Yes. What really helped me was I found out, I went to this Actors Network group, and it was called a Type Me class. If you don't know what you're selling and who you are, it's really difficult. You will bypass the pain and suffering. Everyone wants to be a leading actress, leading lady. Not everyone's a leading lady. It's kind of that thing of, as I'm growing older, sitting into, I'd rather be a character actress with wearing no makeup, losing my hair, and give me a nose prosthetic. You know, let's do it.
Yes.
Let's have something fun. I cried, I'll be honest. You know, in my 20s, it's very difficult to understand because you feel it's so personal at you, you know.
Like, and you're left out, you're not.
Right.
You know, why is he making it, but I'm not?
Right. Or there's something wrong with you. What's wrong with me? Or what, you know, or am I talented enough for this? Anything. You finally get to a point where it's like producers in sitting behind the camera and watching casting sessions, because I've produced plays and short films. And you start to see, you have actors walking in that are sabotaging themselves as they're walking in. And you see it.
It's the way they walk, or
it's the way they walk. You see the lack of self-confidence. You see they're nervous. You see, and that's fine. Look, we've all been nervous. There's been times where my script is shaking.
Yes.
Right? There's such a passion. We all want to do well. We all take it so seriously. So, like they said, it's 31 flavors. Mm-hmm. And some days I'm the flavor they want, and some days I'm not.
Yes.
And that's okay. It's now, I just don't take it as, I don't take it personally. I get it. I don't fit the look of the show. I don't match with that man as a husband and wife. Or, you know what I'm saying? It starts to become more, you think about it as a business. So I put my passion elsewhere. I'll do theater to get that fulfillment, and or whatever, piano, singing, whatever I want to do. It's that thing of not putting so much on each job.
Yes.
That's what I've learned.
How do you deal with the pressure in Hollywood, you know, you need the next role, you know, there's always something going on. It's not like you go to nine to five, right? You go to work and everything is the same every day, right?
When I was younger, I remember it was more stressful. Mm-hmm. And now as I get older, you have to live your life. You have to have other interesting things happening in your life, hobbies. I started the nonprofit because of many reasons, but it fills another need. Acting is not the only thing. It's a job that I do, but it's not who I am, if that makes sense. I'm here to do many other things, not just be an actor. So while other people, my friends are kind of, they get upset about, oh, I'm not working, I haven't booked a job. And it's, I don't do that anymore.
I'm assuming there's a lot more actors than there's roles for, you know,
yes.
Because there's a lot more people who want to do it and less movies. So what do they do? How do they fulfill their life with, you know, or survive?
Yeah. Well, a lot of people have the survival jobs. I would say also, write something that you want to play. Write something that you want to do and go shoot it. A lot of people do that, right?
Or like independent, right? Independent movie, yeah.
Yeah, you can shoot a movie on an iPhone now.
Yes.
Back when I was, we couldn't do any of that.
Yes. Well, in conclusion, I'd like to ask you, what would be your advice for young people who want to get into acting?
Well, things have changed, obviously, dramatically, you know, with internet, social media. A lot of people are doing social media and doing very well, becoming influencers, and whether they're comedians or dancers or singers, Hollywood's coming to them and going, we like her, let's make a show around her. But if that's not your thing, because you know, social media isn't for everybody, get a good education, do theater. Mm-hmm. I think that's the foundation of everything, is being on stage. So if you want to be an actor, I think that's, if you want to be a true actor, I feel my career is about longevity. But if you just want to be famous, I guess, you know, that's a different path.
Yes.
I never thought about that when I was a little kid, loving acting and going to play, to rehearsal and playing Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz. Nothing about being famous. It was about, I love doing it. I love being on stage, right? I love the audience reaction. So yeah, I think getting an education. And nowadays, you can audition really from anywhere. When I was growing up, you had to be in Los Angeles or New York, and that was it. The net is wider now, with casting directors seeing more people. It's cool. Everyone's getting a shot. Everyone's getting opportunity.
And you can watch the full episode on epochtv.com. Next up, the world's biggest watch trade show is underway in Geneva. The annual event showcases the latest in watchmaking craftsmanship. amid rising demand for timepieces. NTD's Andrew Thomas has more on the industry.
Geneva knows what time it is. Watches and Wonders 2025 is the biggest event yet, with 60 of the industry's top brands unveiling their latest creations. Vacheron Constantin's Solaria piece does way more than just tell time. Built from white gold with more than 1,500 individual parts, it took 8 years to make.
We have 41 complications in this timepiece, and these complications are covering, I would say, all aspects of the watchmaking expertise of Vacheron Constantin, notably in the field of architect, of astronomy, also in the field of chiming complications, and also in the field of stopwatches, namely chronograph, because it's also a chronograph with a split-second recorder.
Bulgari's Octa Finissimo Ultra Tourbillon is another watch to make time for. The timepiece is the thinnest tourbillon wristwatch ever made.
This one is very special because it's the smallest ever tourbillon crafted in watchmaking history. And the watch itself comes with 1.85 millimeter, establishing a new record for a tourbillon watch. So we are quite happy to enrich the Octo Finissimo Journée with another milestone, and this is a true, true milestone.
Show organizers say the event has put the world on Geneva time.
Last year, we had 49,000 visitors attending Watch Wonder Geneva. We expect more this year. The entire world will have eyes on Geneva as the watchmaking destination and capital of time during that week.
The United States is the biggest buyer of Swiss watches, overtaking Hong Kong and China.
The U.S. market is market number one. Last year, it has surpassed Hong Kong and China. So the U.S. market is being very important for the watchmakers, and they are following it very closely. Nevertheless, the U.S. market was a market that was still growing, and where the footprint was not very developed, a lot was e-commerce, there could be still some shop openings, not completely mature market yet. So I think it will adjust.
The Watches and Wonders trade show runs to April 7th in Geneva, Switzerland. Andrew Thomas, NTD News.
Stay with us and we'll bring you more news right after this break.